Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, April the 13th, and it's time for our Friday Week in Review. And this week was a week which was dominated a lot, at least the news, by the comments made by this man, Don Imus.
I want to take a moment to apologize for an insensitive and ill-conceived remark we made the other morning referring to the Rutgers women's basketball team. It was completely inappropriate, and we can understand why people were offended. Our characterization was thoughtless and stupid, so, and we're sorry.
Well, the apology didn't help. CBS fired Don Imus yesterday, a day after MSNBC said it would stop simulcasting his program. So, is it over? We'll talk with our guests about the Imus mess and the fallout from it and all the other news this week and whatever else you'd like to bring up. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. Or send us an email, talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Well, let me welcome our guests, our two Week in Reviewers this week, Ann Althaus, professor of law at UW-Madison, a frequent contributing columnist to the New York Times and a popular blogger. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also with us, Tony Palmieri, associate professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh, a former Green Party candidate. He ran for state legislature in 2004. He is media columnist for the Fox Valley's alternative newspaper, The Valley Scene, and also a member of the Oshkosh Common Council. Well, I'm out of it, Tony. I didn't know that you were on the Oshkosh Common Council now. Congratulations.
Thank you. Just got elected on April 3rd. Thank you very much.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank
so
you.
Let's talk about Don Imus. He was fired yesterday, Tony Palmieri. Should he have been fired?
Well, I think in corporate media, once the advertisers start pulling out, there really is no choice from a strict business standpoint. And I think that's what MSNBC and CBS have done. Simply, when you lose your sponsors, it's impossible to keep the person on. And so from that perspective, I think they made a right decision for themselves. But, you know, also from the standpoint that Imus has been getting away with this kind of stuff for years now, and there have been a variety of different complaints from inside and outside the organization, so it really was only a matter of time. But really, as is typical, corporate media misses the main point, which is that, you know, there are very few people of color or ethnic minorities that have any positions of power in commercial radio, and that really needs to be the topic of discussion instead of whether or not Don Imus is a racist.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on the firing, the whole thing, Ann Althaus?
Well, the man was on in the first place because he was able to draw in the advertisers' money. I mean, it's not you can't just have a system of trying to put people on so that different groups are represented and so on. You have to put people on that draw in the listeners. And how does one do that? I mean, it's a kind of a mystery. Certain people have a magic about them, and often they do it by just opening up their stream of consciousness and letting things flow out. It's a dangerous, risky thing for a person to try to do on the air, hour after hour, year after year, even into old age, like Don Imus. And who knows what's going to come out and satisfy millions of people every day? How can you do that? And then two words or three words or whatever come out, and it provides an opportunity for people to go after you. And those people seize the opportunity, you know. It's all a big game, and different people play it different ways. And Imus was one of the players. He was dealing in inflammatory material, and he got caught. And, you know, that's the way it goes. Some people make money in this business, and, you know, and they can't do it forever. They take risks, and they get caught in the end.
I'm wondering, Tony Palmieri, what you think. I mean, as you mentioned, Imus has been doing this for some time, making these very inflammatory remarks, made sexist and racist remarks in the past, and not a whole lot happened. Now, all of a sudden, something did happen, and in a big way. What do you think was different this time than the other times?
Well, lots of people have pointed out, and I think it's accurate, that we're now in the age of the Internet and blogs and so on, so that it's not a case of where a three-second comment now just quickly dies and gets swept under the rug. It's kept alive through a variety of other media sources. And I think it allowed lots of people to kind of unite and recognize that, you know, there'd been something going on in MSNBC. I mean, let's not forget, MSNBC is the same station that fired Phil Donahue in 2003 because he was largely making anti-war comments in the lead-up to the Iraq War. To have that happen and then to keep Don Imus on after making racist and sexist comments about the Rutgers basketball team would just be absurd. But in the era of blogs and websites and so on, people get to make these kinds of arguments over and over again, and they start to stick.
You know, it's what's called a blog swarm. I mean, I love this idea that the bloggers are so powerful, but there is a way that things are done nowadays. And, you know, the political candidates have to worry about this, too. And all kinds of media people, all kinds of people have to worry about it. You know, look at the case of Dan Rather. I mean, if you become the person who is targeted, it becomes an elaborate game and to try to take you down. And it's sort of like if you're the guy that they already didn't like, and now here's the chance to bring him down. There's a whole way that it's done nowadays that people aren't quite used to what's going to happen, but the person just can't get out. It's called a blog swarm.
Or and Senator, I think Senator George Allen with the macaque
George Allen
comment.
And it interacts with YouTube, that the actual clip, it's not just reading it, but it's hearing it and seeing it that makes a big difference. And then the blogs are able to link to that and keep it going with this constant coverage. But it's the ability to get to the actual clip and hear it. I mean, you know, I was just reading about IMS, and I actually didn't get caught up in it so much as other people. I was sort of like, why are people making such a big deal about it? But it was only yesterday I was reading an article in the New York Times by David Carr analyzing, you know, what were the factors in this perfect storm. And he cited YouTube as one of the factors. So I went over and I looked and I found the clip. And I was actually quite disgusted in a completely new way after I saw that clip, because I had just been reading the, quote, nappy-headed hose. You know, everybody saw that. It was much more than that in the context, and it was mostly not Imus, but the sidekick, who was kind of providing cover for Imus, but actually really egging him on and putting it in a much more racist, sexist context where, and on the clip, you see the pictures of the basketball team, the women running back and forth. You know, I don't follow basketball, but if you look, here are these women who worked very hard, who were in the limelight, doing well, and here are these disgusting two old men talking about them. And basically portraying it as if, you know, there are black women and white women, and the white women are attractive, and the black women are kind of, you know, unfeminine and lesser beings. It was really disgusting. And there was additional language that was, I don't even want to say the word that the sidekick used, because it's completely disgusting. And that was much more than what was reported in the press. So I think once you get into the alternative media, the blogs, and then you go to the YouTube and you watch the clip, you get caught up in it in a emotional way that's quite different. And it does make you just hate the whole idea of the Imus show. So I can see why that kind of swarm, you know, worked, why people continued to sort of work the swarm and insist on taking him down.
Let me get a caller in on this. Mary Kay in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. For me, part of the problem, too, is the wording of Imus's apology. I know he sits with these guys who egg him on and encourage him, and it adds fuel to the fire. But he said, we were wrong in our words. I have yet to hear him say, I was stupid, I was wrong. Let the other guy apologize for his words and actions, but I want to hear Don say, me, my, I, not we, our. He needs to apologize just for himself. And to me, that would ring truer than just saying, well, we did something wrong.
Yeah.
We were stupid.
Right. You know, he might have been in his subsequent apologies. That was his first one that I played. And
that's the only one I've heard. I don't go and
I mean, he's been on you know, Al Sharpton's show. He's been on the Today Show.
Was he on Al Sharpton for 3 hours? Yeah. I mean, the idea that he didn't apologize enough, I sort of think the apology, the main thing that caught my attention was the way he was being just dragged and forced to grovel and abase himself and, you know, appear before absolution from Al Sharpton. I thought that was, a bit overdone. I mean, I don't really like the sort of spectacle of, just continued abasement. I thought that was really strange and really not a very good phenomenon. He stepped over the line and deserved it.
Another part of this, Joy, Ann talked correctly about Imus's sidekicks providing cover for him and so on. But, you know, other people who have provided cover for him over the years included some very prominent politicians in Washington. That's one of the reasons why
Dodd,
he lasted
Yeah,
so long.
Chris Dodd announced his presidential campaign on his show. And he, I mean,
what do you mean by cover, though? What was, how was that?
Chris Dodd, Joe Lieberman, Congressman Harold Ford from Tennessee. These people had known for years that Rice's, that Imus and his sidekicks had been kind of like an old middle-aged male version of a frat club there. And yet they participated in it regularly. They never spoke out right. against it, and it took an event like this for now some of them, at least, to distance themselves from Imus. So they helped them out through this time.
So when you say cover, you mean that they appeared on the show and ignored it. They didn't excuse
Absolutely.
It, but they kind of just... Yeah. The fact is, he has... but you can see why it happened. He has these millions of people listening. They want millions of ears. He has the millions of people because he's a shock jock, and they don't want to talk about that because they like getting into the part of the show that doesn't have that quality.
Absolutely.
He doesn't do that when they're around. They're just taking advantage, too.
Yeah,
but they couldn't go back after what happened. The show was ruined.
We'll talk just a little bit more about this. Maybe whether this is over or what's going to happen next because of this after we take a short pause, and we'll continue talking about the other issues in the news this week as well with Tony Palmieri, Associate Professor of Communications at UW-Oshkosh, and Ann Althaus, Professor of Law at UW-Madison, our two guests this week for our Friday Week in Review. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. Jean Purcell in for Ben Marins this afternoon between 4 and 6. After 4, it's the regular Friday feature, Your Views on the News. That's coming up. We're reviewing the news of the week with Ann Althaus and Tony Palmieri, and talking right now about what happened to Don Imus and what it all means. One thing that I've also heard, Tony Palmieri, first, is that, Don Imus was saying what young people today hear all the time on rap music and hip-hop music, and maybe it's time to clean that up. Do you see that being the next step, or where do you see this thing going from here?
I think anyone who thinks that Don Imus's firing is going to lead to a more civil discourse on commercial television and radio is probably fooling themselves. I mean, the fact of the matter is, from the data that I've seen, less than 3% of radio stations have a news director that is a person of color or a woman. General managers in commercial radio and television tend to be largely white males and so on. I mean, until you start to change the makeup of who's running and owning commercial media, you're going to see these kinds of things happening. So I really don't expect any kind of great changes until we see more of a revival of a movement for equality in America. I made a point on my blog earlier this week that we've moved from, I wasn't talking about the Imus case, I was talking about something else, but we're moving from eyes on the prize to eyes on the text, where a lot of people think that media criticism is a kind of civil or human rights activism in itself, and it's really not. I mean, it can contribute to it, but ultimately we need people out there demanding that we have greater diversity of ownership in media and that we have more diversity in positions of power that can produce variety in the kind of media that we hear.
Yeah, we did hear Jesse Jackson this week making that point, too, that MSNBC should have more hosts to counter people like Imus and all the other white hosts that they have, that there are no African-American hosts on at least primetime on MSNBC. Where do you see this going, Ann Althaus?
Well, on the subject of whether, I did a sort of a satirical blog post yesterday about, now that Don Imus is fired, no one can ever use racial slurs again. It's sort of like, that would be kind of cool. Let's everybody stop being racist. Let's stop all the racist. But the idea that, now rap music will stop. Well, Don Imus lost his job because the advertisers all withdrew. What's the equivalent of that in rap music? Yeah. It's our people buying the records. They'll stop saying those things in rap songs if people stop buying it. But they obviously are buying it, and the shock jock stuff works. The inflammatory rap lyrics work. They work until they don't work. What makes people stop? They're not going to stop buying rap music because Don Imus got in trouble. I mean, he's an old white guy. Getting him in trouble is, you know, that's not inconsistent with wanting to listen to rap music with outrageous lyrics. You know, that's, or listening to comedians who you know, who push buttons and push the envelope. You know, people like Carlos Mencia or something like that. You know, that's a part of the culture. How to get that out? Well, you know, it's not as easy as getting Imus out and waiting for everybody else to, you know, be consistent with that.
Yeah. Well, we will move on to other issues and talk about other subjects. We'll let Keith and Shorewood change the subject. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm glad to change the subject. Yesterday, the blast in the Iraqi parliament in the green zone, here we have a case where the most secure place Iraq is supposedly the Emerald City, and a suicide bomber is able to sneak in and cause the destruction that they are able to do it. And, of course, the Bush administration and John McCain blithely keep on talking about how wonderfully things are going. But I'm just wondering, do you think that this was enough of an event that even some of the hangers-on who still believe that we have a chance in Iraq are going to reconsider their position?
Tony Palmieri, you want to start?
Yeah, I think Keith raises an excellent point. No. Kurt Vonnegut, the great Kurt Vonnegut, passed away this week. And before he had died, he had said that the Bush administration was made up of a bunch of upper-crust C students with no sense of history or geography. I mean, they wouldn't listen to anything about the history of that region, that when the British were in Iraq many, many years, 100 years ago, they had the similar kind of sniping and so on and so forth. So, no, I think that the president and John McCain will pull from something like the bombing of the parliament that we need even more troops and more of a surge. And, you know, I think Senator McCain has probably completely undermined his presidential campaign with his ridiculous posturing on this issue over the last month or so to argue that it's now safer in some parts of Baghdad. And then we get the green zone bomb. That's supposed to be the safest part of the city. So no, Keith, I don't expect any change from the administration or its key supporters.
Mm-hmm. Ann Altos?
Well, the idea that an explosion in the green zone would cause people to say, oh, okay, we were wrong, let's just leave, let's quit the whole thing, let's give up, we can't win. I mean, that obviously is not going to happen. Things go wrong all the time. But the fact is we're in the middle of something, and just abandoning it will make things collapse into a much worse situation. The people who are trying to run the war are attempting to do something effective. The fact that things don't go perfectly and things, in fact, go wrong all the time doesn't mean that it's wrong to try to go forward and make things work out. It's frustrating to have people say, you know, oh, something went wrong, so now give up. I mean, it's clear to me that they're not going to do that. They're attempting to win. They think it's that there's no alternative to trying to go forward and win, and that's what McCain is doing. He's being realistic, facing up to the reality of what's actually happening, you know, in the real world, to say, well, this proves that it would have been better in the past if we had not gone in. That's a fantasy, because we can't go back to the past.
McCain and Bush have been arguing that the surge of troops was producing more calm. I mean, a bombing inside the green zone.
So, of course, there would be some bombings.
But inside the green zone, in the parliament, what better evidence would people need to show that the so-called surge is not working?
I just don't think you can point to one thing that happened, however bad.
The bombing of the 100-year-old bridge on the same day?
All I'm saying is that since you don't want it to work, you want it to prove that everything is wrong and we should simply give up, and therefore anytime anything goes wrong, you're going to say, aha, this proves I'm right and they're wrong. They are trying to do something. They can't do it with 100% effectiveness. Wars are never like that. And I think it is important to support their efforts and to notice that they're at least attempting to come up with some kind of a strategy that has had some effectiveness. Obviously, it's not 100%.
Let me get another caller on a related but different issue. Sherry in Whitewater, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I think the biggest news story this week was the extension of all of our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan, both those that are serving now and those that are due to be deployed. From 12 months to 15 months deployments. I think this is a political move by the Bush administration to show that if we don't give him the money that he wants, that he can still throw his weight around, and he's punishing these families. Many of these people have been deployed two and three times, and it's wrong.
Well, I think Sherry's right. I mean, Ann says what we want out of this. We want a sane and fair and humane policy that keeps in mind the sacrifices these families are making. The administration just clearly has a policy that's not working. And then to come out and announce we're extending people's tours of duty, I mean, this is really beyond wrong at this point. And I really blame the U.S. Congress. The position I take is that the Democratic Congress, in taking the issue of impeachment of the president off the table, have really guaranteed that we're going to get the next 2 years of this, whereas Sherry suggests we're going to see these power grabs from the administration, and I think it's wrong.
The notion that it's all political and that extending the tours of duty is something that Bush does in order to use people to throw his political weight around to win in a fight against Congress, I think that's an outrageous charge. I don't believe that at all.
We do heard the president this week renewing his demand for an Iraq war funding bill that he can sign. The Senate came back in session this week. The House returns next week. The president spoke before the American Legion post in Virginia and demanded that Congress send him a bill that he can sign, a funding bill that does not include a timetable for withdrawing U.S. troops. Is that going to happen, Tony Palmieri?
Probably not. I mean, the main reason why we have a Democratic Congress today is because the population at large was sending a strong message to the White House that they want to see a different course in the war, and he's not responding. I just think that the Democrats in Congress have not gone near far enough in responding to the president, and so he is going to get his way, and it's going to have devastating and tragic consequences for the next 2 years. Especially for the soldiers that we have there, the families there, and numerous other people in the Middle East.
Well, I mean, I think Congress has to fund the ongoing war, and the president has to make the basic decisions. There's a limit to how much Congress, can try to micromanage the war, impose its restrictions on the war, and Bush isn't going to accept a required pullout date. I don't think it's constitutional either.
We're talking with Ann Althaus, professor of law at UW-Madison, and Tony Palmieri, associate professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh, our two guests this week for our Friday Week in Review. We welcome your questions about and your observations from the news this week. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Let's talk some about, I just talked a little bit about it in our my last hour, the report that voter fraud in this country is not a huge widespread problem and has maybe been exaggerated for political reasons. Tony Palmieri, does that surprise you?
No, not at all. I think your guest in the last hour, the professor from Ohio, made the best point. The real problem is voter suppression and, of course, not enough support for poll workers. I mean, we've got some major, major problems with voting in this country, but mostly Republicans have focused on the very, very narrow topic of the vote fraud. But vote suppression and the really shameful level of support we have for poll workers, that rarely comes up, and that needs to change.
Yeah. Do you know, Ann Althaus, if the U.S. attorney in Milwaukee, Steve Biskupic, was pursuing cases in Wisconsin, like against state worker Georgia Thompson, because he was trying to save his job.
Well, that's the charge. I think it's a very ugly charge to bring up against someone who has a fine record. And it's if you think the person was, well, I mean, I can't help but notice that the charges weren't dismissed before trial, that there was a federal judge involved. The case went to trial. Whatever mechanism, procedures could have been used to keep the case from going to trial, to do pretrial motions, it went before a jury. There was a trial and there was a conviction. So the notion that it was completely without substance, I don't understand it. Seventh Circuit reversed, overturned the conviction, but we haven't seen the opinion from them yet. They haven't written it yet. I would like to read it. I can't understand how you can float this charge against Biskupic that he's done something without any substance at all when the case went to trial before a federal judge and there was a conviction. To me, there's a mystery there that I just can't understand. And I think the eagerness to jump the gun and smear Biskupic and catch him up in this other, you know, blog swarm that's around Gonzalez over the U.S. attorney's firings, I think there's some real ugliness there, and people need to be careful.
Yeah. I agree with Ann on this one, Joy. Yeah. I think that you know, Governor Doyle and the Democrats and Republicans in Madison have made it clear they have no intention of cleaning up the dirty politics down there. And I think it made sense for Biskupic to prosecute in that case, and I didn't find it at all surprising that the jury convicted. I mean, there's an atmosphere of quid pro quo politics down there. So it didn't look like a case in which was purely political. And as Anne suggests, he got a conviction out of it.
Yeah.
And that should say something.
Some have.
And, you know, people want to say, oh, well, the Seventh Circuit, those judges saw it as completely. Well, if you think federal judges are prestigious, neutral decision makers who we ought to put a lot of trust in, how about the federal judge in the trial who let it go to trial and didn't overturn the jury verdict? There are all kinds of safeguards at trial to keep people from being improperly prosecuted, and that was a federal judge, too. So you want to put your trust in federal judges, how about the trial judge?
Let me bring in Paul from La Crosse. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, in the same vein, Rick Graber was leading the charge on voter fraud. He had a press conference in Milwaukee in front of a house that he said had, you know, someone who had committed a felony in the recent election. No one was ever indicted there. Since this was the other side of the whole, you know, all politics is dirty kind of campaign the Republicans were running, is there any chance at all that someone in Washington is going to want to subpoena his email records and find out where exactly all of this leads back to the federal prosecutor?
Yeah, these stories are kind of linked. Rick Graber, a former Republican Party executive director or chair. Tony Palmieri, any thoughts about that?
I'm not familiar with the Rick Graber situation, so I'll pass this one on to Ann.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with it either.
Well, it is brand new. There is some this was in the Dan Bice column in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel recently. I'm not the state Republican Party went straight to the top in its efforts to make voter fraud an issue in Wisconsin. Uh-huh. Rick Wiley, the executive director of the state's GOP, directed a staffer to send this 30-page report on election abuses in Wisconsin or alleged election abuses in Wisconsin to a top White House official and to push for prosecutions. Says the report was prepared for Karl Rove. And it links the whole U.S. attorneys thing and whether the Republican Party was pushing to have more cases pursued in Wisconsin for partisan reasons. But that's all we know about that. So let's go to Jason in Amaro. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. My question, actually, or comment, goes to the Gonzalez mess that we're in right now. It keeps coming up week to week. And I just want to know, what's the constitutionality of the president continually blocking witnesses from testifying under oath? If they have nothing to hide, what's the big deal? Why can't they go under oath to say what they know and let's be done with it and find out what's really going on here? And I'll take my comments off the air.
Mm-hmm. Ann Oldos?
Well, the president has an interest in being able to have confidential advisors and to talk and to bat things around in a free and open way, to want to overhear and pry into every stage of presidential deliberations and presidential advisors. It's an intrusion on the independence of the executive branch. And that's why there's executive privilege. At some point, you overcome executive privilege. But there's a bit of a game going on here. You know, the Congress is dominated by the Democrats who are interested in politically disabling the president. And they can have investigation after investigation and attempt to weaken him. And he doesn't have to just cave to all of that. He can stand his ground and assert his independence and, claim executive privilege. That's the norm. So, you know, that's the game. The idea that the president has to just subject himself to whatever investigations they want to impose on him. You know, you may like that when you like who's in Congress and you don't like the president, but turn it around and think of it going the other way with a president you like and a Congress that you think is being intrusive or trying to thwart the president in a policy that you think is important. You know, there's separation of powers. There are independent branches. And, you know, there's a certain amount of checking that needs to go on. But the prying can be used in a disabling political way. And the president has an obligation to stand his ground and protect his branch.
Although it is kind of amusing to hear Attorney General Gonzalez and the president talk about privileged conversations and privacy when they have spent the better part of the last 6 years telling every average American citizen that in this post 9/11 age, really privacy can't be what it was. But I guess privacy is okay when it's designed to protect your political cronies. I mean, the hypocrisy on the level of this administration is just really just incredible.
Yeah. So Alberto Gonzalez is going to testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee on Tuesday. Is his job at stake with this testimony, Ann Althaus? I mean, does he have to do
it? Well, it seems like they're trying to drive him out of office. I mean, he's hung on for an awfully long time, and, you know, the president has been pretty good at supporting his people, so...
Yeah.
You know, but it may be that Gonzalez is actually not helping, and maybe a graceful way will be found for him, too. But, you know, he's held on this long. It looks like they want to do it this way. It's hard to understand why.
Yeah, I mean, I think the president stuck with Don Rumsfeld until it became just almost impossible to stick with him any longer. So I suspect he'll stick with Gonzalez as long as he can. They place a high value on loyalty in the Bush administration, no matter what the person has done.
But the president's opponents place a high value on, you know, collecting scalps, taking somebody down. You know, it's sort of like the Imus thing. It's, you know, you see an opportunity to bring someone down, and then that will count as a victory for your side. It's pretty ugly. It's not necessarily helpful for the American people that's the way politics is done these days.
Well, but I think you would agree, Ann, that if we've got a case of the politicization of United States attorneys, any opposition party should look at that very vigorously. I don't know if I'd call it going after scalps. I mean, this is serious business.
It depends on, you know, what they've got. I mean, the idea that the president can set a sort of a policy about prosecutorial priorities is a kind of politics that's appropriate. And there's other things like going after enemies and trying to affect political races that's wrong. If they have the evidence of that, obviously they should be investigating that and bringing that out. But if what they're doing is just trying to weaken the president and, you know, casting innuendo and trying to do things to make a particular person, Gonzalez in this case, look bad, then, you know, that's politics too, and that's bad too. You know, I wish they would operate on a higher level, all of them. But
sure.
There's reason to mistrust everybody involved here.
We are talking with Ann Althaus and Tony Palmieri, our two guests this week for our Friday Week in Review. The number to join in with your issue that you would like our two guests to talk about or your observation from the news this week, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email, talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Peter Donald's in for Kathleen Dunn. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Peter will talk with his guests about the life and work of Kurt Vonnegut, who died Wednesday at the age of 84. Well, let's talk briefly about that as we review the news of the week. You brought him up, Tony Palmieri. Any thoughts on Kurt Vonnegut's life and legacy?
Well, when I was in high school in the 70s, he was one of my favorite writers by far. And, you know, I learned over the years that he was a very, very powerful anti-war critic and a, you know, great spokesperson for social justice. So he will be missed tremendously.
Ann Althaus?
Yeah, great writer. I mean, I remember I went to college in 1969, and the book that they made us read before we showed up for college was Cat's Cradle. And before classes started, we had little seminars where we sat around and talked about Cat's Cradle. And it was, you know, the whole thing of going to college at the University of Michigan, the residential college, which was like a big hippie place, in 1969, we talked about Cat's Cradle. And that was like the center of what we talked about. I remember sitting around on the floor with the professors. That's what we did in those days. And they were talking about Cat's Cradle and getting us to Boko Maru, which was basically a religious practice in the it was a religion in the schools. It was a religious practice of sitting with your soles of your feet together. And so they had us doing some religion or some sort of sexy thing with our feet right when we got to college in 1969. So I remember that very vividly, as you can tell.
Well, more on Kurt Vonnegut after 9 o'clock. What do we make of this new flap that the White House says that an unknown number of emails at the center of this story over the firing of the U.S. attorneys have been deleted, can't be found, Congress is howling that mm-hmm. that doesn't believe this. What do you think of that, Tony Palmieri?
Well, It doesn't sound very credible, number one. And, number two, I do think that the stonewalling needs to stop. And the best thing for the administration to do at this time is give up everything that they have and let the ship fall as they may. I do think at some point the administration needs to realize that Attorney General Gonzalez is proving to be a real liability here.
Oh, yeah, they're going to realize the best thing for us is to give Congress everything we have and get rid of Gonzalez and everyone else you don't like. That's the best thing for them.
The president's alternative, I think, is to complete the last year and a half of his term in 30% approval rating, if that.
He should just hang his head in shame and do what everyone tells
him
to do.
Well, I think he should try and pursue some competence and some honesty in the last year and a half. It's time for some of that.
Yeah.
Well, email is a big problem. People write an email, I know I do, instead of talking on the phone. And so there's all this stuff recorded. There's all this like idle chatter and back and forth, and it can turn around and bite you, And I think there's going to be a lot of disputes over email because people don't realize that it's not as transitory as it feels. People don't take the time to compose things carefully. They use it like speech, but it's in writing and it's preserved. And I think the idea that, email's a real problem may cause you to go over and use a different email account. Don't use your office account. Use some other account. Use Gmail or something, So they were using the Republican National Committee account, which is kind of weird. What about their other accounts? Don't they have Gmail or something else out there? And, but of course that would be open to a private corporation. But people will use different ways to keep their email from coming out. They want to use email like conversation, but it's still out there. And I don't think people really have a grip on how email is going to be weird in the future.
Yeah, and the House Democrats asked the Republican National Committee to hand over emails about U.S. Attorney Steve Biskupic mm-hmm. of Milwaukee right. Prior to the decision to indict former state worker Georgia Thompson. We didn't really go into great depth on this this issue, Ann Althaus. It's worth investigating this, isn't it? Isn't it worthwhile to investigate what happened here?
I just hope there are people who are decent about how they do it. And just as I heard on your station just an hour or so ago about how the lawyer for Ms. Thomas, Georgia Thomas, was saying, don't go after Biskupic the way she was gone after, that basically don't do to him what he did to her or something like that. But basically the idea is, don't bring people down in this political fighting. You have to have some decency and some respect for people's reputation. This is someone who's worked hard and fairly over a long period of time. If you think there's something wrong, do an investigation. Don't do it in the press. Don't talk about it, in this career-destroying way. That's outrageous in itself. Yeah. People need to get control of what they're doing.
We had Tammy Baldwin and Russ Feingold and Herb Kohl. I'm not sure if anybody else, calling for looking into this. Tony Palmieri, it's worth looking into this.
Well, yeah, everyone's kind of piling on at this point. I think Bruce Murphy in Milwaukee Magazine made a great point this week, which was that the Republicans in Washington were really concerned about maintaining control of the U.S. Congress. They really were not that concerned with governor's races in 2006. So from that standpoint, it's probably not likely that Biskupic was as pressured by the Republicans as were other U.S. attorneys. So the Biskupic one, I think, might be stretching it a bit.
Yeah. Let me bring in some callers, other topics. Dennis and Racine, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I would have thought that we'd be discussing the Duke University lacrosse players.
Well, now we are.
Being completely exonerated, not by the district attorney, this renegade that withheld evidence so that he could get reelected, but by the state's attorney general. I believe that the district attorney could not have operated this way, in this despicable fashion, without a cultural climate allowing for it. In other words, the people in the community and in the country wanted to see these young men convicted. They did not want to believe that there could be anything flawed in the prosecution or the alleged victim statements. They wanted these men convicted and sent to jail.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a scary feeling. I mean, young men today are living in a very precarious climate because of this feminist ideology that presumes them guilty and they have to prove themselves innocent.
Well, you know, feminists had to work very hard to get rape taken seriously, and people put a lot of work into it, and there were, for a long time, the presumptions were all on the side of the person who was accused, because, of course, we should have sympathy and a high standard before we go after someone. But in that, you know, there was always a lot of talk about how the complainant, the woman, was not believed, and there were all these attempts to undercut her credibility, and a lot of work was done by feminists to get accusations taken seriously, to get women's testimony taken seriously, and to not just destroy their reputations if they testified about rape. But another side of that is it does then provide cover for people who actually want to bring false charges, and then people have been primed to believe women, believe the woman, you know, and it was important feminist work to do that. But at the same time, it does create these opportunities for people who really are lying to try to destroy someone. And people shouldn't just, you know, people should judge cases on their individual merit. And maybe things shouldn't be assumed. You know, you should, there's a reason for the presumption of innocence. But it's still important to protect complaining witnesses and to realize that rape really is a problem. And that people do tell the truth. Some people lie. And it's always a problem to try to protect the innocent and to also respect victims.
Yeah. I mean, well, Tony Palmieri, your thoughts on the Duke case?
Well, I think the prosecutor in that case is a white, middle-aged male. I don't know if he's someone that has been espousing feminist ideology for most of his career.
Well, he was taking advantage of work done by feminists to respect the testimony of women, and then it looked like he was doing something that was politically motivated to take advantage of an opportunity where, in fact, the evidence wasn't there, and he should have known better, and he should never have done that.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, Joy, earlier in the hour, you talked about what's new in this day and age. I mean, I think cases like this get caught in the 24-hour news cycle, and they are sensational cases. But I still, you know, do believe that rape, sadly, is one of the most underreported crimes in the United States, and that really needs to change. So to use an event like this to suggest that maybe there are too many filed charges, I think that's inaccurate.
Yeah, I didn't say that.
No, I know you didn't say that. But
I mean, people report crimes all the time, and sometimes they're reporting people that they're just mad at, that something didn't really happen. And the people who are in charge of prosecution have an intense obligation to judge the evidence that's brought to them and to only bring charges when they should, and certainly not to bring them for political reasons. Now, it seems like all the things we're talking about kind of link together, arguments about, you know, fixing on like witch hunts and mm-hmm. and doing things for political reasons instead of really operating competently and using the evidence in a neutral and accountable way.
Yeah.
Wasn't that DA also, wasn't it also alleged that he pursued this case because there's a big African-American voting bloc in that county.
Yes,
and
yes.
And if he didn't believe the victim,
he
who
didn't
was
the white man and the black woman, I mean, she was, to champion her is something that you could see the political value of doing that. And, of course, if she was telling the truth, it would have been right. But he needed to exercise independent judgment. If you're going to hold the position of prosecutor, you better do it right. I mean, I just don't know how morally a person can be a prosecutor and not do it right.
Yeah. Well, the Senate passed a bill this week, the U.S. Senate, that is much like the one President Bush vetoed 6 years ago or so, the stem cell research, mm-hmm. embryonic stem cell research funding. Is this going to end up the same way, Ann Althaus?
Well, I think Bush has his carefully worked out moral position on it. Remember, right before 9/11, he put all this effort into studying it and coming up with his solution. So I think he has a lot of political stake in how he resolved it. And, I don't know that he's going to accept a different position.
Yeah, and I meant to say that was the only bill that Bush vetoed in more than 6 years in office when he vetoed it. Tony Palmieri, same result this time around?
Yeah, same result. I mean, we don't have a lot of time to debate embryonic stem cells, right. But I just find the president's position puzzling in that these stem cells would simply be thrown away. And I really honestly don't understand the position he and the people he's listening to on this are taking. I think the person who's really in trouble is Senator Norm Coleman from Minnesota, a Republican who's up for re-election next year, and ended up sponsoring a separate bill for political cover. The public has made it clear that they want a wide-ranging stem cell research and are not on the same page with President Bush on that. So I think he's doing serious harm to congressmen and senators of his party that have to run on this issue.
Yeah. This week in the state, legislature is once again going to be looking into whether we should change campaign finance laws and have more public financing of campaigns, particularly in light of the high spending and highly negative state Supreme Court race. What do you think of public financing of campaigns in Wisconsin, Ann Althaus?
I'm against it.
Why?
Let people make contribute. Because who are you going to give the money to? Let the people raise the money. Let people who want to give money give money. And then they'll use the money to make their arguments, and the people will decide. Keep the government out of that. Let the candidates operate independently. I don't like funding them. They get too much money anyway. Let them get it themselves.
Tony Palmieri?
No, I think states that have greater public financing have much more lively and robust elections than we have. And more contested seats. The Supreme Court race was one of the most outrageous events we've seen in Wisconsin for many years. I think that there really does need to be public financing.
What are you saying was outrageous?
The fact that Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce could literally buy a seat on the Supreme Court is nothing short of outrageous.
You don't think the people decided in the end?
I don't think the people decided in the end. I thought this was a very, very unfair campaign, and I think that if you had a public financing system with candidates on equal footing, relying on grassroots support, you'd see different candidates running, number one, and you'd see more robust and lively and issue-oriented campaigns rather than these, drive-by smear jobs that we're seeing. It's outrageous.
Well, there's a lot of smearing going along against the woman, going against the woman who won too. Seemed like most smears went that way.
Well, that's true, and a lot of the smearing is taking place by outside groups that are spending tons and tons of money to support candidates that meet their agenda. In a public financing system, you would not have that.
But it's part of politics that people support the candidates who serve their interests, and it's up to, in the end, to an intelligent, educated, smart electorate to decide who to vote for and to see through those things.
We're out of time, but I think I can get you both, I hope, to agree on this issue. Do you want more or less snow this April, Tony Palmieri?
I'm ready for spring.
Yeah,
more snow.
All right, we're going to have a disagreement on that, too. All right, thanks, Tony, for being with us.
Thank you.
Tony Palmieri, Associate Professor of Communications at UW-Oshkosh, just elected a member of the Oshkosh Common Council, and Ann Althaus, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ann Althaus, Professor of Law at UW-Madison and a popular blogger. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.